you fear most in football staring you right in the face?
Mark Grody.
I call him a maniac. Stone maniac.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
You had to overcome the mystique. It was almost like an odor. He exuded a kind of a presence.
His whole damn life was football. Wasn't driving a pretty car. Wasn't going to the local bar and pounding your chest, I'm the greatest. It was the opposite.
Mark Grody.
He was Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl.
Mark Grody with Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Mark Grody is the man, and he joins us right now on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort. The Circa Resort and Casino and the Circa Sportsbook is just the jam, and they sponsor the hotline, and we have Mark Grody on said hotline as of right now. Groats! I know we'll get tidbits and nuggets and injury report stuff later, but why don't we start there in terms of Roma Dunze, and if you would tell us what you know, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, that's the lead, Matt. I mean, Roma Dunze did not practice today because of the knee injury that he has been dealing with. I did see him in the locker room. You know, we don't get to talk to the injured players or the guys that are sitting out. You know, there's a lot of times you can't really see anything discernible in the way that Roma Dunze is walking. I did not, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have an injury that would keep him out on Sunday. We don't know that yet. So that's Rome. I don't think I saw Keenan Allen in the locker room today. Doesn't mean he wasn't in there. I did not see him with my eyes. He also was held out of the practice today because of that heel injury that he's been dealing with. And just from my experiences, typically when guys are sitting out fully in practice this late in the week, it does not typically portend well for the actual game that is going to occur, but can't rule them out at this point. Tomorrow will be a big day to see if they get out there in any way, shape, or form. What does this mean if those two guys can't play? I mean, Tyler Scott, who was inactive in week one, saw him in the locker room, could tell he's antsy. He would get activated for sure. More DeAndre Carter, and we saw a decent amount, probably more than we thought we would see from him in week one against Tennessee. And it also probably would mean that Velus Jones would be active as well, and if only for a safeguard and to add depth to a wide receiver group that could be hurt, and it could be down to DJ Moore in terms of your targeted guys. But again, we got to wait till tomorrow to find out for sure on Roma Dunze and Keenan Allen.
Which could be why, you know, a lot of people asking, why is Velus still on this team? Well, if the wide receivers are hurt, you know, that may be why they're kind of hanging on for dear life here.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, he does, at this point, he does provide a little bit of safety for you, but you know, the other part of this is, you know, will they continue to, if Odunze and Keenan Allen continue to be down, if they are down for the game and on, could the Bears try to pick somebody up off the street? We'll see what happens, but this does, I mean, it's normal life in the NFL. Guys get hurt, and sometimes that is to the advantage of other players. I was talking to a defensive player today in the locker room, too, who was talking about that. Yeah, it's like between active and inactive, it really comes down to those guys. Like, if they're an injury, and then I get my opportunity. So, man, I hope this isn't the case, that these guys are out this early when these are the dudes that we talked about so much during the preseason, but there is a little danger here.
Groats, we want to get to the tape, and we got good stuff from Shane Waldron and from Eric Washington here on Coordinator Day and more, but I had a crazy idea that maybe we'd see Roschon Johnson this week. Inactive last week, we know they like him as a pass protector, and that middle of the offensive line having some issues, maybe he's the guy that they'd want to have out there. Do you think there's any chance we see Roschon active this week?
Well, I mean, they pretty much show that they don't want to put Khalil Herbert out there, it feels like. I mean, in terms of the volume he had, you know, DeAndre Swift obviously didn't get going either, but we saw Velus Jones running the ball before we saw Khalil Herbert run the ball, and we all know how much, and maybe not as much as they did before, how much this regime does like or seem to like Roschon Johnson. I wouldn't rule that out as a possibility, but I do wonder also how much, like, how seriously did they take what happened in week one with the offense? Did they look at that as, okay, it's a first game, bad things are going to happen, slow starts occur, it is typical in the NFL. Do they need to make these drastic changes? It's one of the things that I haven't really been able to get to the bottom of, is that after one game, is there anything philosophically and generally speaking that you change with this offense. And I'm not even talking about just there's the whole part of game planning specifically for your opponent in the Houston Texans this week. But will Shane Waldron do things differently in this game philosophically? And that is not a question that has been answered yet. And obviously they're not going to say that because that would be giving stuff away. But I think that's something to watch on Sunday night.
Mark Grody, get to Shane Waldron and tell us what he had to say that perked your ears up and you want our listeners to hear.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, Spiegs. What perked my ears? Because there was a lot of acknowledgement from Shane Waldron on the offense needing to be better and Caleb Williams needing to be better and all of that kind of stuff and the cliche talk and be where your feet are. There were two, I thought, discernible cuts from Shane Waldron. One of them was as a response to what Caleb Williams told all of us, and he admitted that at times he was rushing his drops. So Shane Waldron was asked about that in the name of making that better.
I think just with talking about, you know, with Hunter and Anderson, right, their crush rush, and they do a great job condensing the pocket, but also working edges and getting to the outside. I think for him, that starts with the trust of himself and then everyone around him. And so going in and having all the confidence in the world, in Darnell and in Braxton right there on the edge, and knowing that that's a great starting point for us. Okay, now you can play with those clean feet, play in a clean rhythm, because you do have that great faith and trust in everybody around you.
Yeah, that's interesting because that trust, and you could tell he didn't trust the middle of that line and had good reason not to right there in week one. Right, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, and man, this, as he mentioned, he didn't give full names, so I'll do my journalistic job in filling in the full names, but talking about Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, that is one of the best defensive end pairings in the league. And one thing that is scary, too, is that neither Will Anderson nor Danielle Hunter had a sack last week. So they have not gotten off yet, and guys like that, or at least it seems so with Will Anderson, he's only been around for 1 year, he's not going to be held without sacks very often this year. Hey, another guy, too, that's on that defensive line that we know well because he was here is Mario Edwards, who has a motor, and he had a sack last week against Indianapolis, just like a complete body slam with bad intent. So Edwards is a guy that you got to watch out for as well. So this is, I mean, if there ever was a test to not rush things for Caleb Williams, this would be it in the degree of difficulty. Even though Tennessee does have a good defense, this is a step up in class in terms of those that are coming after the quarterback.
I can imagine Cole Kmet was a topic of conversation with Shane Waldron. He's been a topic of conversation in this city all week. Grody, what do you have to say about getting Cole more involved?
Yeah, I heard you talking about that yesterday, Ruthie, and like wanting to see Kmet. I feel like there's a point in every season for Cole Kmet, especially early when we're all like, Matt Nagy, why are you not putting Cole Kmet on the field? And, you know, we heard Cole Kmet talking about it and saying like, hey, man, I'll do whatever I have to do. It doesn't really matter to me. And he talked about egos and things like that. He's one of those guys that I actually believe when I hear him saying those things that he is about the team and he doesn't need everything, but he's got an ego. Shane Waldron, where was he, man?
I would piggyback right off of that because we know Cole's one of the top tight ends in the league. He does a great job for us. He's done nothing but the right thing ever since I've been around him. So just that's more on us and starting with me of getting the reps, a little bit balanced out, but it also goes back to playing efficient football, and when we're doing that, you know, not getting tilted out of some of the ways we wanted to go into that game.
Interesting. You know what I like about that is that Shane Waldron took accountability there.
Yes.
And one of the things that frustrated me last year with Luke Getsy was the lack of accountability on his part. And so I really, and not to always compare the two, but I do find that noteworthy that he said that's on me, and I appreciate that from Shane Waldron.
Yeah, and I do wonder if he's done his research or if a smart person in media relations might have coached Shane Waldron a little bit. Not necessarily just on that, the Luke Getsy comparisons and taking accountability, but guys what it's like to be an offensive coordinator in this town. We know that QB1 has always been the issue, but the second most, and I would say even maybe 1A, the second most scrutinized position in this town forever has been offensive coordinator. I mean, it's easy pickings. It's always easy pickings to go after the offensive coordinator. That's what we do in this town.
Well, this Bears fandom is defined by quarterback starvation. So when the quarterback blows, and you've talked about him enough, you move on to the coordinator. Or if you still have hope for the quarterback.
Trying to blame someone.
Yeah, if you still have hope for the quarterback, you start pointing higher. And it has happened immediately here in week number one. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a big time of adjustment for Shane Waldron. And by the way, thank you to you for asking the question that furthered the conversation that led the show today about the pure progression quarterback stuff. I'm sure we'll talk more about it. Maybe I will tomorrow with David Hall when he's in here with me as well. But just incredible stuff. I thought his answer on that, Mark Grody, which people can use the Rewind app and go back and listen to the lead of this show, and they should at some point, thought his answer to that was really transparent and incredibly helpful.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how thorough it was.
Right.
It was really good stuff from him, and you know, that gives you a little bit of an idea of his offensive coordinator intellect. So, yeah, that was great stuff. I'm looking forward to hearing what Kurt Warner has to say about the answer that Shane Waldron gave. And I'm even more interested in the new Spiegel and Haw show. Wow, that's great. So Haw's moving to afternoons?
Yeah, well, he's just company. It's Spiegel & Company. We've rebranded.
It is officially Spiegel & Company.
Yeah, it's Spiegel & Company. We've rebranded for today and tomorrow, and we'll see if we need to keep the rebrand going.
Right.
Okay. All right.
TBD.
All right.
And it's fun to say. Spiegel & Company. Go ahead, Ruthie.
All right. Well, we also heard from Eric Washington today.
Oh, no. I wanted you to give Grody a Spiegel & Company.
Spiegel & Company.
Grody, got one? Yeah, was that it?
Spiegel & Company.
All right, thank you very much.
Oh, that's pretty
was
just
that?
Just trying to arm Tanny with stuff. That's all we're doing.
I feel bad for Eric Washington because I feel like he doesn't get enough love. And I guess there's a part of that is like, you know, we don't really know exactly how much he's responsible for on game day. But we do know because we know Matt Eberflus is calling the defense. But I do listening to him speak. I think he's so thoughtful and honest, candid, whatever you want to call it, with the media. You had an interesting, you liked what he had to say about the big boy, Andrew Billings. Yeah,
Big Bill. You know Big Bill, Ruthie, a very interesting player, interesting dude. And yeah, you know, Eric Washington, he is not the play caller, but he is the coordinator, meaning he is working with these guys every day in practice. And then Flus swoops in and calls the plays on Sunday. So yeah, try to figure out Eric Washington. But also, like, hey, man, Andrew, there were a lot of stars on that defense, obviously, with DeMarcus Walker and, you know, just a bunch of guys. Daryl Taylor, almost couldn't remember his name again. Two sacks in the game. Just a bunch of playmakers on the day. Jalen Johnson, you guys were talking about him. What about Big Bill and Andrew Billings' effect? I loved what Eric Washington had to say.
There was a play that Andrew made in the second half of the ball game that I thought was critical. It was a hit on the quarterback and just the effort. Hot day, reps had started to accumulate. We need him to anchor the line of scrimmage. The effort that he used to rush the quarterback, I just thought was phenomenal. And we have a saying in the room, when you see big men running, whether it's in pursuit or chasing a quarterback, that's always a positive sign. It's something that really energizes our entire defense.
For him to line up, I think it was one snap on the outside. I mean, what do you like about that matchup that you can see me or, you know, sometimes use?
What we try and do is just create, you know, anytime the offensive line has to prepare themselves for four guys or five guys in multiple positions, we think that that's a challenge for them and an advantage for us. Andrew being able to line in that position, and all of a sudden the left or right tackle has a different person, a different traits that he has to contain. And if executed correctly, it could give us a pretty decent advantage. So we really like that.
Man, that's great stuff, Groats. Good choice. Because Billings was killing it on the edge. Walker sometimes killing it from the middle. I thought this stat that Brad Biggs had in his column this morning, Bears had 10 quarterback hits. Last year, they had their 10th quarterback hit in week 4.
Wow.
That's an awesome stat. Yeah.
Right? I mean, so my goodness.
Flus is bringing it.
And none of those, and so is Eric Washington, yes, who's a teacher and a smart man, yes, on defense. And none of those quarterback hits were Montez Sweat. Not one of the 10. So,
yeah. Wow.
Bodes pretty well.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely terrific what we saw Big Bill able to do out there, and hopefully that continues, man. I mean, we talked about the big guy on Tennessee side, but Billings, man, put on a show.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Montez, it is Montez, isn't it? That's Montez.
Oh, Montez, man. We had a good day with the great Montez Sweat today, and we began talking about the Houston Texans.
How difficult is it to game plan for a team that not only has obviously a really good passing attack, but they've got Joe Mixon doing what he's doing and what he's done in his path?
Yeah, not only Joe Mixon, they got Laremy Tunsil, who I believe is, if not the best tackle in the league, definitely a top two, top three, and also on the other side, Titus Howard, who came out with me, who's also a respected tackle in the league. So they have a good line up front and definitely a very talented back. So we got to bring our
Love it. What makes Tunsil so good?
Yeah, he's an athletic human being, a big athletic human being. He just brings his lunch to work every day, so you gotta be ready.
So that's Montez.
Oh yeah, Montez loves that Laremy Tunsil brings his lunch to work every single day.
This week on That's Montez, Laremy Tunsil brought us lunch to work and Montez took it.
Oh no!
What are we gonna do about Laremy Tunsil's lunch?
Granny wasn't happy about that. Granny very upset with Montez for taking Laremy Tunsil's lunch.
Next week on That's Montez, Granny makes Laremy Tunsil's lunch and Tez takes it again.
It's amazing.
Right
we
now,
have Roman,
and then
have
Roman and then everyone, yes. Montez thought he was grabbing his helmet, but he grabbed Laramie's different kind of mask.
Oh, the bomb mask.
I love it.
Little
oh,
callback,
no.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, it was a good callback.
Good callback.
To Laremy Tunsil's draft.
Guy loves weed. Hey, Ruthie mentioned how the Floos. Look at the Floos calling these plays, man. I mean, he's been a really good play caller since he took over from Alan Williams last year. As we keep this edition going of It's Montez, Montez Sweat was asked about Matt Eberflus, the play caller.
He's great. He's going to switch it up. He's going to go with what he sees fit, but he also plays to his player's strengths. So that's what I think I like about it the most.
Where do you see an example of him just having a good time or just knowing when is the right time to?
I guess when he dial up one of them third down pressures or when he just let the four down front go get after. I mean, I'm not a play caller, but I think he does a great job.
Would you like to be a play caller someday?
I'll be smooth. I like to call my number. So, yeah.
Grody, you're a hero.
I love it.
You're a hero. I mean, the first laugh was spontaneous, but then you queued up the second laugh. And we need as many Montez laughs as we can get.
Oh, I know. Once, like, that's it. Like, once he starts joking around, all the follow-ups must be funny stuff. It all has to be. Whatever questions you wanted to get in, you got to throw out the window. When you get that man going, that laugh is so infectious.
And my money's on you to have the improv skills to get the most laughs out of Montez in the locker room.
I am trying. I feel like I'm trained in my own little way in that locker room to be a leader. In those regards, I'm not going to get it every week. It's not going to happen every week. But this week, you just got to go. And once it occurs, like I said, I threw away my notes. I'm like, okay, no more asking about. It's time. Okay, so would you want to be a play caller? And I thought in the heat of the moment, I was actually happy with the question, which typically I am not happy with my questions.
This is not a drill. Montez is laughing. Throw away the notes. Everyone, immediately, adjust.
This is an actual emergency. Stop, adjust. Drop, and roll, and ask funny questions.
God,
all right,
incredible.
Really quick, really for one serious minute. You know what we haven't talked about enough on this show today, Speaks?
What's that, Ruthie
CJ Polinsky? Stroud.
Oh, he's like, good. He's good.
What are the Bears saying about him, Grody?
Yeah, well, I thought the best guy to talk to one of the best guys to talk to, I'm sure there are others, but Jaquan Brisker, the Bears safety, he's got a little inside information on CJ Stroud. Here it is.
Just how poised he is, just like he was at Ohio State when I faced him, just how poised he is, how he goes through his progressions and things like that, and then when all things fail, he still has legs, and now he's running in the NFL. Back in college, he didn't run as much, so now he's running. So
when you saw him in college, did you think he'd be this in the NFL?
Yeah, I thought he was. He was young, and you know, he made a lot of throws, you know, against us and things like that, so he was very poised at that time, so I thought he would.
Man, that's cool. Yeah, Brisker at Penn State, making me want to go back and look at that box score against Ohio State and C.J. Stroud. It's so weird, man. Stroud was really good at Ohio State, but so was Justin Fields. And here's Stroud, really good in this system. And, God, it does make me wonder, you know, what it would have been like for Justin in a system like that. But Stroud is faster to release the ball. Stroud is faster to go through his reads clearly. And he's more efficient mechanically. And he's not tempted by the ability to run as well. So it's just a really interesting thing. I'm glad you asked Brisker about it.
Yeah, he's so clean. He had like an old school comp for me with him in some ways would be Troy Aikman. Just so clean and systematic and just like puts the ball where it needs to be. He's the real deal. He's the real deal. Like, I don't think there's going to be like a sophomore slump if you needed any evidence. Last week might have been it. But he's certainly a joy to watch. And he did break the streak of Ohio State quarterbacks that were not good in the NFL.
Yes, he did. Textures are offering ways that you could get Montez going. Montez, have you seen The Fugitive? I've got some great, stick for you.
If he's a Fugitive fan, it's game over. It's game over for the 2024 season.
Another texture says, deploy the Dave Miska impression. I don't know if Montez was a big fan of the Dave Miska.
Oh, Montez, oh my God, they're going to gobble up like four blockers. Oh my God.
It's a very
sorry, I'm interrupting Halas Hall right now.
Oh, it's a very narrow casted impression. All right, I know you're at Halas Hall. Can you see us on video, Groats?
I actually don't have my video.
Oh, that's
up
okay. Well,
right
you take a look
now
after. I just
sorry
want to know what you thought of Big Doug.
Oh, you saw my picture on Instagram.
Oh,
didn't you?
Okay. You stand by. Okay, I got to tell you guys something about all this Ruthie Polinsky dog business. I got to tell you, when you guys talked about it the second time, Ruthie, about the little dog getting getting destroyed. Yeah. Honestly, I was like,
he's not destroyed. He's just elsewhere.
Okay,
he's living his best life. And
it's a stuffed animal dog, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, honest to God, you know, I'm a little ditzy sometimes. I was listening to you guys. When I heard you guys talk about the second time, I literally turned the radio off. I'm like, I've had enough of this. And I'm serious. I was upset because I thought you were talking about a real dog. I'm like, what? Like, how small was this? What the hell happened? And it was very, very up. I'm not even making this up. I was like, stop it. I'm like getting mad at Spiegel. I'm like, why you keep bringing this up? I'm like, off. Off goes the radio.
Oh, Mike. No, it was a stuffed animal. God.
Okay, now I feel so much better. And when I saw your picture that you put up on Insta, yeah, Ruthie, understand. Can I call you Ruth, by the way? I noticed that I felt so much relief because it was soul crushing to see that.
All right. Well, I'm so glad I asked. Any Bears nuggets or tidbits?
Grody, call her Polinsky.
Okay, Polinsky it is. Yeah. I have another funny story from the locker room,
like
if I
that
may, before I tell
he
you
totally
something.
He totally knows her like that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Groats.
Yeah. So we're talking to Jaquan Brisker in the corner, probably a herd of reporters. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm standing kind of in front of another locker. An alarm goes off, like a typical iPhone alarm goes off. And I look down and I just see legs. And then all of a sudden, out of all the clothing and jerseys, pops out Kyler Gordon just out of nowhere. He was snoozing, which they're allowed to do. This is no shade towards Kyler Gordon. If you want to take a nap in your locker, hey, more power to you. Look very comfortable. But it was the weirdest thing. Like, Cassie Carlson and I were like looking at each other, oh my God, there's somebody in that locker right there.
I can see Cassie's face.
Oh yeah, yeah. We both were like, because we were the ones that had an angle on it. There's enough room in those lockers to sleep in those lockers. I don't even know if they're lockers. They're just
they're pretty deep, right? Like, you can get your legs up.
So and he was like on a pile of clothes or underneath a pile of clothes?
I think he was just laying down like on the wood. I don't know how would you describe the what they are, Ruthie? Like, I keep saying lockers. They're just
It's like a cubby.
It's a cubby.
It.
That's
cubby.
It.
All right, so a couple things. It reminds me of some of those drunken nights in my 20s where I slept on the love seat in the living room because I just needed to. So you can
sometimes
squeeze
the bed is too far.
Right, sometimes it's exactly right. And Kyler Gordon is a flexible man. The ballet dancer himself.
Gymnast
Spider-Man. And ballet dancer.
Spider-Man.
Kyler Gordon.
He's got webs in his wrists. Yeah.
Maybe he likes to sleep in compressed areas. He's like the little guy in Ocean's 11. He's like the gymnast in Ocean's 11.
I mean, superheroes have interesting habits.
Yep.
Spidey, you good?
Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Spidey. All right, bro. It's good stuff. Anything? What
else? Okay. Real quickly, if you got him, Brisker also said to make sure the secondary is playing deep because Stroud will take shots. The 58-yard bomb to Nico Collins. You should see he's dangerous, by the way. No word today on the offensive line and if there will be changes. Do they still rotate at right guard? Are they still cool with Coleman Shelton at center? And that is all. That is all for today, guys. Great talking to you. Enjoy the rest of your party. And Ruthie, I'm so glad that we were talking about a stuffed animal. Bye, guys.
I love it. Thanks, Grouts. Love it.
Thank you so much.
I can't wait to see those Houston receivers up against this secondary.
It's a serious
matchup. It's going to be fun.
It is serious stuff. It is on Sunday Night Football. You and I both doing television on Sunday night, right?
Yeah, we are. I'll be on Sports Sunday. Layla Rahimi, Dave Wanstead, Mike Berman in Houston.
Outstanding. I'll be on a competing network. I'll be on Fox with Lou Kanellis.
We're later than you, so not really competing because we go on after the game.
Oh, okay. Well, we're on. Yeah, I guess we're out. We're on just
before
the end
of the game.
Oh, no.
Whatever. It's going to be really fun with me and Lou Kanellis and I think Cassie Carlson.
Fun.
As well. All right. So, look, there is a real advantage in getting to hear what the opposition thinks of you. Mm-hmm. And we got something from the very tippity top of the Houston Texans organization that Ruthie Polinsky found that is outstanding. Let's listen to it together next before Dave Wanstead at the top of the hour on The Score.
Advice would you give to a guy like Caleb? He was the number one pick. You were the number two pick. What kind of advice would you give a guy?
Be yourself. Be yourself. Understand whatever got you here is just good enough. You don't got to be superhero. You don't got to try to make all the plays. And sometimes the boring plays are good. But yeah, that's what the advice I would give to him.
That's CJ Stroud of the Houston Texans. Bears Texans on Sunday night, starting to feel nice and big, isn't it, Ruthie Polinsky? Was that a pig suey? Is that an Arkansas Razorback thing? I don't know what the hell that was. She's
getting
just
excited.
Just feeling it. She's feeling it.
When Coach gets here, that's when I really go all in.
Dave Wanstead on his way, one would assume. You sent this in the group thread this morning. This is Nick Caserio, the boss of all things Texans, a former New England Patriots guy. Mm-hmm. And this is a really cool find by you. Let's listen to it, then we can talk about it. This is his drop-in with the official Texans radio show, I do believe it was. And there was a long interview with Caserio, but right here he's asked about the Bears and unleashes an off-the-cuff, with no notes, rundown of pretty much the entire organization.
The team that we saw 2 years ago in this team, and this is like might as well played them 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think it starts at the top. What Ryan and Coach Eberflus have done, taking some work to kind of get to this point. But when you look at how the team has been constructed, they obviously had a plan in mind about how they wanted to put the team together. So, Matt's done a really good job here the last few years, going into year three. Matt's a really good coach. You know, we saw him when he was the coordinator in Indianapolis. Offensively, they've been able to assemble a pretty good offensive skill group. So, obviously, drafting Caleb number one overall, he's a very gifted thrower of the football. The thing about him, he's able to, I think, he's moving to throw. You know, where you see some quarterbacks that are kind of moving, avoiding to run, he's moving to throw, kind of has a unique way of keeping plays alive. So, a pass rush and keeping him in the pocket is going to be important. And then on the perimeter, traded for Keenan Allen, who's been as productive a player as he's been in the league. DJ Moore is probably one of the more underrated receivers. He's a really good catch and run player. So when he gets a ball in his hands, he's hard to tackle. Drafted Adunze. I know he was hurt there in the first game, so we'll see if we see him. I'd say one of the more underrated players on their team is Cole Kmet. I mean, this guy is a very steady, consistent, dependable player with really, really good hands. Signed Everett, who has experience in Coach Waldron's system. It's funny, Shane and I actually overlapped in our time in New England together. So he worked in operations and transitioned to coaching. So Shane's a bright guy, has a lot of experience, vast array of offenses, and he's kind of through the years been able to put something together. They're kind of a game plan, I'd say, oriented teams trying to figure out what they have offensively. And you said it, John, their offensive line, a number of players that they drafted in the first or second round, they drafted right. you know, their left tackle, actually, Braxton, they drafted him in the fifth round, mm-hmm. drafted Jenkins. So I'd say they're a combination of youth and experience, you know, the offensive side of the ball. And then I'd say one of the key signings, DeAndre Swift, is very versatile three-down back. So certainly present a lot of challenges offensively from a skill perspective. And then defensively, I mean, this is a good defense. I mean, a really good defense. I mean, say between the defense and the kicking game, they essentially won the Titans game. So good front. And when you look at once they acquired Sweat last year, their production and performance defensively improved exponentially. So he's a unique player, long arms, can rush the passer. They've actually gotten really good production from D-Walk on the other side, yep. So who was here in Houston a few years ago, so has some front flex. Made the trade kind of at the cut down with Darrell Taylor, who provides some edge rush, drafted Booker in the fourth or fifth round, whatever it was this year. So good on the edge. Good inside. Billings is a load in there. So, and then drafted Dexter and Pickens. Dexter looks like he might be a little bit ahead of Pickens at this point. And then the two linebackers are really good football players. I mean, really good football players. Edwards, you know, talk about team building and some of the things. How do you get players on your team? He's arguably one of their best players on defense. One of their best players on the team was undrafted. Yep. So led the team in tackles last year. Very smart, very instinctive player. Edmonds, I mean, 6'4", 250, runs well. And then they're really kind of a nickel defense. They're a little bit like us. So their slot corner, Kyler Gordon, who they drafted in the second round last year, gives them a good presence on the inside. And then really, you know, drafted, you know, all three corners, if you will, are second round picks, right? They took Jalen, who's one of the best corners in the league, and a Tyreek Stevenson, who played a bunch of ball last year on the other side. And I signed Byard in free agency, who's a very experienced player who we played a number of games against when he was in Tennessee. And Brisker's a good young player. Yep. So, I mean, they play with an attitude and a mindset on defense. You've, Matt obviously has an influence. Coach Washington, a little bit more of a front. Matt, a little bit more of a secondary player or secondary coach. So they kind of merge it together. And in the kicking game, like, they dominated the kicking game. So they have some good core players. Drafted the punter in the fourth round who, you know, hits the ball really well. So this is a really good football team that presents different challenges that we saw with the Colts. They blocked a punt for a touchdown. J.O. scooped it up, and they scored there. And then DeAndre Carter, who, you know, he had a stint in Houston at different points. Yep. We actually had him on a practice squad back in New England back in the day. Shows you how old I am. But 70-yard kickoff return and a good punt return. So they had in the starting field position, there was a number of plays, a number of series that started inside the 20. So Tennessee was going on a long field. So certainly could present some challenges in the kicking game. So, you know, hopefully we can get some of the things that we need to improve fixed. And then the kicking game, as we see each week, can be a big part, can have a huge impact on the game. There's no question.
Damn!
Crazy.
That is crazy. Gives you a window as to how plugged in an effective and smart NFL GM is, just able to run down everything. I don't think he missed a single fact in there about which round people were drafted in, etc.
When he was talking about Edmonds, 6'4", 250, like, rattles off his weight and height, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, this guy's got to have a photographic memory or something. It's not like this is the only team they play. Like, it was, that was crazy the way he just went through the roster.
Yeah, it's true. And granted, it's game week, so by now, and this was from yesterday, he's gone through it a little, but like,
so,
6'4", 250 for a middle linebacker is noteworthy,
sure,
on Edmonds.
Of course.
Right? So all of those items are noteworthy. The fact they drafted a punter. Oh,
very gifted throw over the football.
I love that about Caleb.
Thrower of the football.
That is so football guy speak about a quarterback.
Thrower of the football. It's like Slayer of the Dragons.
Very gifted thrower of the football.
Can I use seven words when two would suffice? Very gifted thrower of the football. Six. Damn it, I guessed, and it was only six words.
That's great.
But, man, that's amazing. But it gave all of us vibes in the group thread of his former boss. This was him in 2022.
If you wouldn't have told me, like, if I would have...
You know, had a chance here to spend some time looking at the Bears, you know, offensively, and it feels as a, you know, as a major threat every time he touches the ball. A very athletic kid. You know, Mooney is a really an outstanding receiver. Houston Carson is really one of the better coverage players that we'll see all year, and Blackwell is very fast, so... They have a lot of team speed, Cruikshank, you know, and then some of their, you know, their linebackers, which those guys run well too. The skills got a big leg, punter's got a big leg, and you know, he whacks it down there pretty good. You know, Jones in the return game, strong, explosive guy. You know, we spent a lot of time on him. Really dangerous with the ball in his hands, and then Pettis and Ebner need a good week of preparation here and be ready to go Monday night.
I love it.
You knew it was like Bill.
I started to say this. I'm sorry that I didn't catch that we were going to run Bill, but I love it because I love Bill. If you wouldn't have told me that was, I would have said, oh, that sounds exactly like Belichick 10 years ago. Like, it sounded like a younger version of Bill. I'm like, that was a guy that was sitting in rooms with him talking about personnel before he was with Houston, and it just makes total sense. That was before the Monday night game?
That was before the Monday night game.
I love it.
Where Fields was
I wasn't
good.
Here yet, but I was following that game, man.
Yeah, I bet you were.
That was a fun one.
A little bit more from Nick Caserio towards the end of that interview. It just happened to be their random kicker goofball question, and it involved the Bears. Here's a little piece of that.
Couple more things. This year, the Texans play the two oldest teams in the league with the Bears and the Packers. The Bears, when you think of them, you think of the 85 Bears. So, better defense, Nick, the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens? Or you could throw in a writing candidate if you want.
There's a reason behind this selection. So, I'm going to say the 85 Bears for the sole purpose. So, when that Super Bowl took place, so I can't remember how old I must have been, 9 or 10 years old at the time?
Yeah, me too.
So, I'll probably get in trouble. Hopefully, the league won't find me for this, but our parents kind of made a little wager for us that if the fridge scored a touchdown or in the Super Bowl, that we would get new bikes.
You were 9. I think you're safe.
So wait, you got new bikes and fridge scored?
So the fridge scored, right? On the fullback dive. So we got new bikes as a result of that. So we were going crazy. But, I mean, both of those defenses, were as good as they come. And when you go back through that, the front, the caliber of players at all three levels of the defense, you can't go wrong either way. I'm just going to kind of tilt it because the fridge scored. We got bikes out of it. So.
Very nice. And
bikes out of it.
See, that's lovely. Makes me actually like Nick Caserio a little bit. He's got a soft spot for the 85 Bears because they got free bikes when the fridge scored.
Love it. Very
bad
historian.
For Walter Payton. Bad for Walter Payton, but good for Nick Caserio. All right, we got to take a break. Ruthie Polinsky is here. It is Spiegel & Company. Dave Wanstead, a mere 10 minutes away on 670 The Score.
You know, the two mistakes on the bases, which are, kind of inexcusable, frankly.
So that was last night, late, from Craig Counsell. This is Spiegel & Company with Spiegs and Ruthie Polinsky here on The Score. But we played it earlier today when talking about Seiya Suzuki getting caught trying to steal third in the ninth inning, down two runs. And he was also talking about Pete Crow Armstrong's base running error. But you correctly pointed out, Ruthie, that when you hear a manager say inexcusable, and he said it after a long pause, there's power in a manager or a coach using that kind of word, right?
There absolutely is. And I drew a parallel that some people, maybe weren't a fan of to a player and on the Chicago Bears.
Oh, it's funny. Yeah, you did.
And
Velus Jones
Jr.
Because of the frustration with the talent that's so obvious, but the mistakes that keep happening. Different levels. Production, of course.
And interestingly enough,
yes,
I was correct.
Ruthie is spiking the ball because Richard Hightower today was talking to the media about Velus Jones's fumble on the kickoff return.
In fact, I just talked to the kid 5 minutes before I walked in here because we just happened to cross paths. But, in regards to what happened in the game, it's unacceptable. We all know that. We value the ball. And on that particular play, we didn't. And it hurt the football team. So, I'm not going to sit up here and make the whole press conference about Velus because there were so many other players in that game that made significant contributions. And I think they deserve to be, highlighted.
Wow. That's Richard Hightower. And you could tell how much he likes Velus and how much he didn't enjoy having to talk about it the way that he did. But unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
That's pretty damn near inexcusable.
Unacceptable, inexcusable. Similar power to those descriptions from to a manager and a head a special teams coordinator, I guess. But, those are people in positions of power that have a lot of say. And listen, all those coaches that were banging on the table for Velus Jones got a little bit exposed. this week.
That's right.
Like, and so you got to come out and you got to be strong about how you feel about him after the whole world just saw you guys go to bat for this guy.
Yeah, their ass is on the line because of their faith and trust in Velas, and it looks bad for them. No, I think that's accurate. And it's interesting. I don't think we'll see Velas Jones Jr. returning kickoffs on Sunday night. Do you?
No.
There's a question as to whether he'll even be active. What would you do if you're a head coach going into week two when week one is a win but had its frustrations? We'll ask the former Bears head coach who sits right here between us. It's a damn handsome man. Dave Wanstead joins Spingler Company next on 670 The Score.